Up a club, get a punter feeling hot like they used anchor rub. When we do what we love, see the smoke above. With a hot-headed approach, turn and push to shove. Like a bushfire in scrub, we ambush the dub. Set in a lighter rap book with a pencil stub. It's essential, cuz feel it heat your blood. We be blazing on the mic like Nimbus blazes, but singe the ears and keep it lit like gear. With no laws to fear, let it burn.
Habits I'm willing to break.
Speaking of broken, I'm trying to.
Segue into one of the.
I don't really think any of these albums are broken.
This is a fucking enjoyable week.
It's an interesting week. Now it's a sound alike week. I picked this week on the Balls podcast After Dark. We've picked an album by a Dutch kind of doom noise pop rock garage type noisy thing making noise singing and blokes. Kind of a band called Bartek. And we've also got an album by a aging Scientologist called Beck. Where do you want to start with the new album?
Let's start with Beck.
We'll start with Beck.
Because I feel it's...
What up, Beck?
I feel it's really nice of him to listen to my sort of underwhelming feeling about the new Shins album that came out this year and decide to record a Shins album for me, because that's pretty much what it sounds like to me. It sounds like a Shins album. Sounds like a good Shins album. This is much better than the Shins album did.
It is. The album's called Colors, and it's definitely got a more of a kind of an 80s synth pop feel. I think we alluded to this when we picked the albums last week. It's definitely got more of an 80s kind of synth pop feel than anything he's done recently. To the point where I was wondering whether we were actually listening to Duran Duran at one point, because it was just so overwhelmingly of a time that was not the time that we're in right now. But to its credit, it does it well.
It does.
And I think it's executed really effectively. And while Beck always had a reputation as being an innovator and a mashup genius. This album definitely isn't anything out of the box. It's not something that hasn't been done before.
Oh no! But that's what I mean.
Beck's reputation as being an innovator and a mashup genius comes from 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not that, you know, this is really an old man album, and yeah, it's pretty impressive effort, given it's not innovative genius, but it's still interesting to listen.
It's really well made. Like,
it's a good take.
This is I'm not kidding. This is what I wanted from the Shins album, and he does that same falsetto sort of singing style. The reason I feel so strongly about the Shins thing is, he's got that real same vocal style that the Shins use quite a bit. There was a couple of songs
the
I felt...
The last Shins album was so fucking forgettable that I can't reviewing it.
It was terrible. Terrible. There was a few songs I thought drifted into a bit too sugary.
Yeah. There's some diabetic moments in this album.
Yeah, but the balance overall is pretty good. Like, it's not going to make my shortlist, I don't think, but it's definitely one that I think I'll whack it in there just so I go back and have another listen to it, because it's quite an enjoyable album to listen to.
Yeah, at its peak, like the title track and I'm So Free and Dreams, which he drops in twice to make sure you get the point, are really, you know, they're catchy, they're insubstantial, there's nothing to them, but they're really interesting, they're fun, and in some cases it was almost like a better take on that crap Tame Impala album. You know, and they've re-released that crap Tame Impala album from a few years ago as a special edition. And I would like to ask why.
What's so special about it?
What's so special about Currents? Currents was a bad album. Why are you re-releasing it? But what they were aiming for with Currents, I feel like Beck hit. with a lot of the stuff on this album. It was like a much better executed version of whatever they were trying to do on Currents.
Well, like, I was just thinking about
apart from the songs where he was ripping off Ben Folds, which I thought was quite interesting.
the thing that I used to like about the Shins was the sort of the wistfulness, but also the it had sort of like a dynamic feel. Like it just felt like the songs were moving. Like with this style of sort of 80s synth pop infused, if it gets too slow, if it bogs down, that's where it just sounds too sugary. It's got to feel like it's moving along. And I thought he captured that really well. So I like this album. I was thinking, oh man, this is going to be another old man album that we just absolutely fucking slag on. I was not keen for this one at all. So
well, I'd heard such polarized responses from people who were self-identified Beck fans that I thought I really don't know what this is going to look like. How this is going to turn out. But, I mean, it's my favourite Beck album's Odelay. It's nothing like Odelay. There's like one track, like Wow feels a little bit like that kind of mashup.
But even Sea Change is one of my favourite albums, which is like an absolute dirge. Like you can just tell the dude was depressed after a breakup. And it's nothing like that either. it's pretty easy to see how people would be fan of one album and not like this. Like I can see that pretty easily.
Yeah.
But so what did you think of Bartek?
What did I think of Bartek? Bartek, who are Dutch on purpose because they've got to be Dutch. That's kind of who they are. So the intro to this is kind of this fucking two chord doom metal dirge, and you think, oh okay, this is not what I thought I sounded up for. And then the rest of the album is like really engaging, fun, basically fuzz power pop.
I got touches of Weezer in this,
Recent Weezer is Toiletries. It's not good. We're not going to be reviewing the new album because all the singles on it are shit. Your internet didn't hang. That was just me holding that note for a long time.
But early Weezer, but only the sort of second and third tracks, and then it sort of got into, like it wasn't like a straight ripoff. But geez, it was. Fuck, this was fun. This is going into my shortlist.
Yeah, this had more breadth than I thought it would. I thought it would just be, just a bunch of dudes bashing out some chords, but it actually went from all the way from like doom fucking fuzz metal, like fucking like old school Queens of the Stone Age sort of stuff, right through to stuff that the Ramones could have done. That was just sort of three chords and jumping up and down sort of shit. I guess in a way this is kind of 90s throwbackish because there were bands like this, 20 years ago that did it, mashed up the same kind of influences. But I suppose all music is kind of a mashup of things that have been around before. At 24 minutes, it's basically another EP, like we were talking about last week with the Cairo Knife Fight album. Shouts to Cairo Knife Fight, who found us on Twitter after we name dropped them.
Oh, really?
Notes. Yeah, their Twitter account popped up and liked our the tweet about it and said, "Oh yeah." It was like, "Oh, you guys are fucking stoned." What a damn surprise! But good band, Cairo Knife Fight. Shouts to them. But this was fun. Again, a little bit like the Cairo Knife Fight album. My only disappointment was that there wasn't enough of it. You know, 24 minutes, I felt like I would have liked a bit more. But the
best thing about a short album is, you just turn it around and start it again. I think I listened to this album twice today. It's easy to jam in the whole. And this is the thing, like, I really 48 do.
48 minutes worth of action? I mean, what else do you want?
I really do like listening to an album from start to finish in one go, preferably on the headphones when I do the headphone listen. Yeah, can't decide what my favorite song is though. It's either it's Heavy or Numb. I can't decide.
That's interesting. I really like the more. I mean, I like 22 and Nothing, Someday and Sunken Eyes. I like those sort of catchy poppy stuff more than. I mean, my only known Heavy was Heavy Is, because it's much more sort of, you know, it's more grinding kind of doom laden stuff, which is good. But I think their other stuff kind of works just a little bit better.
Have they got a back catalogue? I didn't go back and have a listen to
the back catalogue. I am not sure. I haven't actually looked. I don't think they do. I think this might be their first album. And, you know, I think it's 24 minutes. It's a 9-track EP as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Okay. So
what I was going to say is that I haven't really had a good chance to put things on the stereo and crank them up very much recently. There's been a lot of headphone work. And part of the reason for that is your pick of a classic album, which has words in it that my kids know and use, but shouldn't, and I'd like to encourage them not to.
Yeah. Yes, I had that in the car too. I had this, you know, on the daycare run to pick up and went, I should probably change this.
Wake up. This country needs a fucking shake up.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, when this album dropped, right?
18 years ago.
The big sort of controversy was that it was the first song that Triple J had played in prime time with the C word in it.
Yes.
And I sort of feel that's done the album overall a bit of a disservice. Like, it's not the strongest album. There's some pretty experimental weird shit that comes
with. What's the album we're listening to, Bezo? What was our classic album for the week? Because I forgot to say that part.
It is An Elephant Never Forgets, and if you are looking for it on Spotify, it's ELEFANT, not
as in the same name as the record label. These guys are from friends of the show, I suppose we can say, The Herd. Bezo, I mean, really, this album, we just got this album up as an excuse for you to tell stories about back in the day and running gigs and hosting them at your joint and all that sort of stuff. But
this album dropped before I was even running the Alley. So they would have probably done an album launch at, maybe the Zoo. The Zoo was sort of a bit strange with hip hop, but like I said last time,
yeah, they didn't want anybody whose crowd they thought were going to be a bit difficult. I mean, they famously banned Rum from the bar because they felt that they had made the crowd rock up too much and kick off. So I think that they were much more selective about who they got through the door and who they didn't.
And listening to this album, you can sort of see where the pushback from traditional Australian hip hop heads came from, because there's a couple of tracks in here that are almost, well, you can see the Hermitude influence actually, you know that electronic, The World Keeps Saying. There's one instrumental in here that I just thought.
There's several instrumentals in there that are kind of interesting choices. Like there's one that's in. Seems to be in Polish or Czech or something that is basically accordion music. There are some, I think as we alluded to last week, as we kind of predicted, there is stuff in here that maybe doesn't need to be here. But you kind of just have to set that aside because, I mean, or you have to accept that dilutes the power of the album as is, because it does kind of wander off in the midsection. But it's hard to keep focus for an album for a full hour.
Yeah,
not just because we've all got ADD, but you know, particularly if you're a band that you're an outfit that is a collective, everyone has to get their shot. It's a bit like having a basketball team; everyone needs their hands on the ball. Everyone's got to get their shot, and if you've got a collective, everyone's songs have to get on there somehow.
Well, especially in the early sort of formative stages of a band, where you know that
you don't really know what your sound is.
Yeah, and the power dynamic hasn't sort of sorted itself out. You know. when a band's five albums in, yeah, everyone knows who, you know, these guys bring the songs in and these guys bring the lyrics in and we put it together. It's probably a lot more professional.
You end up with more recent Hilltops where it's just too
polished.
Just bang the table. It just becomes so polished that it's got nothing interesting to it. You know, they've sanded off all the interesting edges.
I still think the high points are pretty fucking high. Burn Down the Parliament, Super Weeds, 77%. I love Hell.
77% really fucking hit home this week.
Yeah.
While it was a different brand of bigotry we were talking about, it was the same idea that there's just a hardcore fucking cabal of fuckwits out there that really need to be stomped.
Mm. That's the thing. Like, you could have tweaked the lyrics for that song to reflect the gay marriage debate.
I literally did, and re-release it,
and it would just be so topical for today. Yeah. And this is the thing about the Herd. They were smart guys with a point of view that they wanted to get across, and you know, like American sort of gangster rap was still one of the main forms of hip hop around when these guys were kicking off, and they were just so far away from that.
It was probably had more in common with Midnight Oil in terms of being intelligent Australian protest music. And the thing about protest music is that it doesn't age as badly because usually they're talking about enduring themes and concepts that don't go away because, as, like we can see with this, so much of it is still valid, unfortunately.
Yep. Funnily enough, I think Super Weeds is my favourite song on the album. I just think it's a great sort of pop hip-hop single. I don't know how much, I can't remember how much play it got at the time. You know, Burn Down the Parliament and 77% were the two big singles off the album. But
I think it's also because it's got the word weeds in the title.
Yeah, that's possible. I haven't got too many stories about them, you know, at the alley. They were one of my favourite, if not the favourite band to bring up because they were just always happy to be there. They just love performing, and that they could be fucking dead on their feet from doing a show, you know, in Sydney the night before and flying in for a show, and it wouldn't matter. They just absolutely brought the fucking heat on stage. And it never felt like, I know this album feels like it had filler, but they only had two albums at that stage, and there's really not that many big singles off the first album. Scallops is probably the only real sort of real poppy sort of sing-along single, but...
Potato Cakes.
Yeah, Potato Cakes. It never felt...
They had to change the name for people in Melbourne to understand.
It never felt like, you know, that they were just jamming out sort of interludes to fill a set when they played either.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that any of the more wandering off, you know, any of your Jazz Odyssey content would have made the set. It would have maybe the DJ fighting around before the lights went up, you know, playing incidental music, fucking about and just, you know, while the punters filed in. Maybe that's where that stuff sits, but I can't imagine any of that made the set when they're actually out there.
Yeah. I think the fact that Burn Down the Parliament and 77% could pretty much get released right now and you wouldn't think that was a 20-year-old song. Like if someone went,
but if they released Burn Down the Parliament, they'd have fucking
Asio turn up. Asio turn up on there.
He's fucking jackbooted, pissing fucktards to ruin your day.
It's a lot harder.
Australia's much more fascist than it used to be.
And it's a lot harder to do that now because there's a big fuck off fence around it. So
yeah, well, you can lob things. But in 1999, it was a long time. I mean, that was the end of John Howard's first fucking, he was going for re-election, you know, it's a long time ago. But it's amazing, it's disappointing how fucked Australia still is.
Yeah, and that's why I sort of picked it. It's just like, it'd be really nice to look back on this album and go, oh, isn't that quaint? How much things have changed. And it's like, well,
we're still fucked.
No, there's still a whole bunch of guys that are as bad or as worse as this in positions of power in Parliament
probably
in Australia.
Probably worse. That's the thing. I mean, we think back to, I mean, a couple of years after this, George W. Bush got in power, and we're like, fuck, he's the worst, the absolute worst.
And now everyone looks,
now he's like...
He's like this fun, fond figure that everyone sort of...
Started a few wars, you know, committed a few human rights violations, but, you know.
Yeah. Overall, he wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, yeah. Except he fucking was. He was the worst. What are you going to pick this week? Can I suggest you pick Neil McCoy's new country music album? Take a Knee, My Ass. Brackets, yes. I Won't Take a Knee. Close brackets. Fucking Cletus.
There was the Green Day's Greatest Hits I could have picked.
No, you couldn't, because it's Greatest Hits.
Well, you are not going to be happy with one of my picks. I can tell that you tell it. There was another one that... Oh, actually, that might be interesting.
We don't have that much time left this year. Can you just pick the last few albums that you've got?
Okay, well, let's go with something that's a little bit sad, but I think will be good. And that's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings' posthumous album, Soul of a Woman. Because unfortunately, Sharon Jones has died from cancer, but I do like her stuff.
Which is a career dampener.
Yeah. And then
were the Dap Kings buried with her?
No, they're like one of those. They're one of those old school, you know, almost like, you know, the Blues Brothers band that just is just professional musicians that play sort of everywhere.
Are they better than the Sacramento Kings?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good. Well, the Sacramento Kings got a win today. They beat your Portland Trailblazers.
Oh, Jesus. Really?
An embarrassment and a shambles.
And I'm just looking because I can't find where I saved the other one.
We are a fucking shambles.
And
are the New Zealand Rugby League.
As soon as I say, you know, I'm going to say something and then you're going to go, we've already fucking picked this. Have we picked...
All right, well, you keep thinking of that. Do you want me to pick a classic while we're... because I can at least have that discussion and then keep fiffing away.
Sure.
So, I follow the inestimable, that's a word. Shirley Manson on the Twitter, she tweets for her handle is @garbage, and she tweeted that they're doing another reunion tour to support the 20th anniversary of their version 2.0 album. And that made me think their version 2.0 album wasn't very good, but their first album was good. So I know we were talking a little while ago about great albums of 1995 and how we'd had a whole lot of them. Well, I'm going to throw another one in. Garbage's debut album. Produced, infamous, you know, as we know, Butch Vig, infamously the producer of Nevermind, Nirvana's work, was part of Garbage. Kind of post-industrial pop, I suppose, would be a good way of describing it. Kind of grungy, angry, angsty, queer, which was literally one of their songs, you know, gender bender kind of messed up shit, which was very, you know, very appropriate for the 90s. But it was an album that, given that it came in 95, that was basically when I left high school and went to university. It was an album that left a great impression on me. And I think the thing with the difference between that album and its sequel was that I think version 2.0 might have had stronger singles, but I feel like Garbage, as in Garbage, Garbage, the title track, the album, self-titled debut album, which should itself just be a category. What are the greatest self-titled debut albums in the world? because how many are... Actually, on that point, how many bands have released fantastic self-titled debut albums?
Not that many.
Lots of them. Like most of them. Most of the self-titled debut albums. You know, if you release your first album, you name it after yourself. We literally talked about one last week.
I still like Funcore's naming their second album Greatest Hits.
Yeah, that's a good trick. I like the name. You know, you fucked up when you've named you've done the self-titled album very late in your career. You know, you're pretty much washed at that stage. But yeah, so the Purple album from Garbage is the album of the week. But I will probably listen to version
2.0. Yeah, I think I will as well, just to see, because I've got a funny feeling that version 2.0 is going to sound very, very of its time.
It might all sound very, very of its time, but I think it might all just sound incredibly quaint. But I also want to sort of back test my presumption that 2.0 had the better singles. The first album was better end to end, but I might be right, might not be right on that one.
So I finally managed to track down, and the reason is it's a random pick. I guess it must have been a Discover Weekly save
release radar,
something, because the band is called Dead Heavens, and the album called Whatever Witch You Are. I can't remember anything about them, but they're at the top of my saved list, so let's give them a go.
Dead Heavens is, they have popped up on my release radar at some point as well.
Okay.
They are a New York based blues rock band, which is a bit of a supergroup, because they have people who've played in a whole bunch of other bands, but yes, they've definitely popped up on my release radar too. I thought they might have been there's a New Zealand band that has a similar name, and I thought that might have been them, but it's not them. But
okay, we haven't had the best of luck with a supergroup this year, so
yeah, well, it's not really super because they're all guys no one has ever fucked.
Yeah, that's right. It's an ensemble.
It's an ensemble act.
Yeah.
It's an ensemble act. Ensemble. I'm trying to think of what the New Zealand band was that I thought that you were picking. But it would be boring if I went back through my notes and tried to find that out.
The Balls podcast story.
Indeed. Dead Favors is the band I thought you were talking
about. Yeah, I have heard
Dead Favors are a Kiwi band. I think they must have a new album out soon. And there's some other ones as well. There are other New Zealand bands. Who would have thought?
Crazy. You mean Dave Dobbin isn't in the entirety of New Zealand music?
I wonder if Dave Dobbin has anything new out.
Oh, dear.
Dragon are probably still touring.
Dragon? Pretty sure Fat Freddy's are still touring.
Black Seeds are now appearing at a beer festival near you.
Mm.
Actually, no shit. The last weekend I went to the fucking GT3 racing up at Highlands. But one of the reasons I went to that was because I missed out on tickets to the beer festival, which was held the same weekend but on the Saturday, which is the one I went to years ago. You know, the one that I turned up and
did the semi-conscious
one. Yeah. But one of the acts that performed at the beer festival this year was David Dobbin. So he performed at the beer festival along with some other Kiwi bands that there's a Kiwi band called Good Shirt that were a big kind of alternative pop songsters in the late 90s, early noughties, I think. Who also reformed just to play at this fucking beer festival. So it's turning into a massive event, and I'm not surprised that we weren't able to get tickets because we didn't get our act together. So Dave Dobbin is still alive and still out there giving it the da-da-da boom-booms. He has other songs too, which is something I only learnt when I moved here.
What, winery tours is where it's at. You got to make a living.
It's not even a winery tour if you turn up to a football stadium and it's just a captive audience. Good times, classic.
All right, Doc. I will see you next week for some garbage.
You will not see me next week because we don't put the video on. Because it takes
up too much bandwidth. Our internet won't handle it.
Your internet won't handle it. Currently, I'm recording this. I have TweetDeck open with multiple columns and I'm watching a football game.
Shut up.
All live streamed.
Shut up.
It's your internet that's the problem.
Goodbye.
Beep, boop, boop.